brought to you by Penguin.
Enlightenment by Sarah Perry, read by Alex Jennings. There are two hungers, hunger for bread and hunger of the uncouth soul for the light's grace. I have seen both. R.S. Thomas, The Dark Well. Part 1, 1997. The Law of Ellipses. Monday. Late winter, bad weather. The River Alder, fattened by continuous rain, went in spate through Audley and beyond it, taking carp and pike and pages torn from pornographic magazines, past war memorials and pubs and new industrial estates, down to the mouth of the Blackwater and on in due course to the sea. Toppled shopping trolleys glistened on the riverbank. So also did unwanted wedding rings and beer cans and coins struck by empires in the years of their decline. Herons paced like white-coated orderlies in the muddy reeds. And at 4:30, a fisherman caught a cup, untouched since the ink was wet on the Battle of Maldon, spat twice, and threw it back. Late winter, bad weather. The town oppressed by cloud as low as a coffin lid. A place spoken of in passing, if at all. Neither Boudicca nor Wat Tyler had given it a second glance when they took their vengeances to London. And war had reached it only as an afterthought, when a solitary Junkers discharged the last of its ordnance and extinguished four souls without notice. Thomas Hart was at his desk in the offices of the Essex Chronicle, surveying the town through a dissolving window. At that hour, and from that vantage, lights appeared as fires set by travellers that crossed a soaking fen. Strip lights in the shoe shops and newsagents not yet shuttered for the night, and in the cinema and bowling alley opening for business 2 miles out of town. Lamplight in the bar of the Jackdaw and Crow, and street lights coming on down London Road. A man of 50, Thomas Hart, and a man of Essex for his sins. Tall, and retaining as much hair as he had at 40, which is to say more above the collar than the brow. Dressed, as has always been his habit, in clothes chosen to be admired by the observant. A jacket, single-breasted, in Harris tweed. A white shirt, cuffed with silver links. A tie of oatmeal-knitted silk. A face he does not deceive himself is handsome, but understands to be memorable. The nose not symmetrical, but of a pleasing, emphatic size. The eyes large, direct, and approaching green. An air altogether of occupying a time not his own. Might he be more at ease in an Edwardian dining room, say, or on a pitching clipper's deck? Very likely. Thomas was surveying an object on his desk. Two leather discs about the diameter of his own hand were fastened with a tarnished pin. The lower disc was painted blue, and mottled with markings he couldn't have made out even if he'd been inclined to try. The blue showed through a large hole cut in the upper part, and gilded letters at the rim showed the months of the year, and the days of the month, and the hours of the day. Thomas touched it as if it carried a contagious disease. "What," he said, "do you imagine I should do with this?" A younger man was sitting at the edge of the desk, swinging his foot. With the downcast gaze of the guilty, he turned the upper disc with his finger. The hole moved. The blue persisted. "It belonged to my father," he said. "I thought you might make something of it." Nick Carlton, editor of the Chronicle and grieving son, looked with unconcealed amusement about the small office, which, despite the plastic Venetian blinds and the computer's hard drive humming as it laboured at its work, despite the 20th century wearing itself out on the pavements 3 floors down, gave the impression that at any moment a gramophone might strike up a Schubert Lieder. "I was sorry."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?